Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's All of It on WNYC. I'm Shamita Basu, in for Allison Stewart this week. In 1968, a public access show premiered on a local New York City station featuring Black artists, performers, writers, and activists. There had never been anything like it before on television.
Live and in color from New York City, Soul welcomes.
The very first musical performance of our
Soul
show.
Was one of the most controversial, successful, and socially significant TV shows in U.S. history. Some people have called it the Black Tonight Show. During its 5 years on air, the show featured prolific Black thinkers and doers from James Baldwin to Maya Angelou, Alvin Ailey to Muhammad Ali, and running the show was the always measured host, known as Mr. Soul, Ellis Hazlip. In 1972, Hazlip got together with Lincoln Center to produce Soul at the Center, a groundbreaking festival celebration of jazz, gospel, and rhythm and blues. And this week, Lincoln Center is hosting a tribute to that event. The headlining act is Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Layla Hathaway, daughter of Donny Hathaway. She's here with me now in the studio. Hi, Layla.
Hi.
Also joining me is Melissa Hazlip, niece of Mr. Soul himself, and the director of a 2018 documentary about Ellis Hazlip. Melissa, hi to you too.
Thanks for having us.
Of course. Melissa, let's start with you. Your documentary, Mr. Soul, premiered at the Tribeca Film Festival last year. And you start the documentary by pointing out this sort of paradox, which is that network television in the 60s was advertising for shows like In Living Color. And at the same time, there was an absence of representation, really, on the screen. What made Soul such a breakthrough program for its time, and what allowed for its success?
I think what made it really interesting is that it really interrupted the landscape of television as we know it. Not only was it a vehicle for African-American artistry, but it was a platform for political expression and the fight for social justice. That was not the trifecta we knew. You know, you might have a host and some variety, but there was no color, there was no representation. What made it unique was that it was a broad spectrum of the African-American experience for the first time validated as art and as being important and as being normal at a time when being Black in America was a really fraught experience because of, you know, post-Jim Crow and because of the riots and the way people were reacting and responding to the conditions. So here you suddenly have this beautiful show which shows the full array of the Black experience, artists, dancers, singers, poets, and it was just so invigorating and it was revolutionary for its time.
And this was 1968, right? 1968. The time that it started. Only 5 years on the air, which is, I suppose, a relatively short run, but it was also on public TV. What was it about being on public TV that sort of gave it a different sort of in?
Well, it certainly is an interesting time for it to be on public TV because it was pre-FCC, so there was no 7-second delay. You can do pretty much whatever you wanted. You had a full hour, and so it was kind of up in the air to have a show that was live and featuring people that really the mainstream audience hadn't seen. Maybe they'd heard before, or they'd seen artists either on the Chitlin Circuit or up at the Apollo, but you weren't actually seeing the brilliance and multifaceted culture and art on television. So that was really, really exciting. To see that on public television meant that it spread out across the country.
And so the host, Ellis Hazlip, your uncle,
yes.
How did he get his start in television? Because he's not a big flashy sort of entertainment world kind of character. He's very soft-spoken and just very measured in everything that he does.
He was very measured. I think he was kind of a quiet revolutionary. He approached life as if he knew what he wanted to do and he set out to do it, but he was very laid back and he was really an excellent listener. And I think people were drawn to that because he, as we say now, he would lean in, but he wouldn't intimidate people. And how he got his start was he had been really involved in the Black theater world and had taken many different tours with Alvin Ailey and produced Marlena Dietrich and gone across the country and across actually across the world, really working with so many artists and platforms that were just, you know, in their nascent stages. And so having had these experiences with this, you know, full blossoming theatrical community, he really had his fingers on the pulse of what all the artists were doing. So it was easy for him to make that transition into television.
Mm. So 4 years into the show, in 1972, that's when Soul at the Center, the festival, happened.
Right.
Can you give us some context to understand just how big of a social moment this was? Because it really, nothing had ever existed like it before.
I think it's smashing when you think about it, because nothing had ever happened like this. It was actually the first collaboration between Lincoln Center and the Black community, which is kind of hard to fathom now.
In 1972.
Mm-hmm. And Lincoln Center was still very young. And as we know, Lincoln Center, you know, the actual building of Lincoln Center had displaced a lot of Black and brown people just by the nature of raising that community of buildings. And so to come back and have a collaboration and a wonderful festival of Black culture that really showed dance and music and art and poetry, that was really monumental, because those buildings were so austere, and many people felt it wasn't meant for them. So to be able to come to these buildings and fill them with Black culture and vibrations, that was very significant.
Layla Hathaway, you're also here with us in the studio. And Layla, your father, Donnie Hathaway, performed on Soul and was part of the inaugural Soul at the Center Festival.
Was he?
Must have been.
I did not know that.
Oh, you didn't know that. Well, okay, I was looking up the timeline. I'm not that surprised that you don't know that, because you must have been really little at the time.
Was I even born?
Maybe you
were.
It was 1972.
Oh, I was here.
And he was in concert.
This is amazing.
Are you looking at the poster right now?
I sure am.
His name on the lineup?
I'm going to have to get one of these printed out. That's
so
beautiful.
You have to frame that next to your
own
now.
So many layers.
Yeah.
Well, tell me, Layla, I don't know what your memory might be of him ever performing when you were younger.
I don't have much memory of seeing him perform. He died when I was 10 years old.
Yeah.
And a lot of my memories really have morphed into memories that people tell me that they have of my dad, which is crazy. I've met some people like in Japan and Africa and places my dad never got to go. And they have such beautiful memories of him. And they come to the show and they are dressed like him, and they bring the album still, you know.
They're dressed like him?
They're dressed
That's
like my dad,
sweet.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's really amazing the impact that he had.
Is there anything that you've been told about his performance or his style that sticks with you now as a performer?
You know, I think the stories that touch me most are when people come to me and say, girl, your dad got me through college, or your dad got me through a divorce, or, you know, when my mother died, that's all we listened to was your dad. And people have a place for music, which is like, for me, it's my best friend in the room that knows everything about me. It knows where all the bodies are buried. And for people to embrace him and hold him like that, and he's been gone 40 years. So I think that's amazing.
Let's listen to a little bit of Layla's dad, Donnie Hathaway, on Soul.
Get yourself in gear. Keep your stride.
That is Donnie Hathaway performing on Soul. My guests here are Melissa Hazlip, the niece of Mr. Soul himself, Ellis Hazlip, and Layla Hathaway, the daughter of Donnie Hathaway. Melissa, can you talk a little bit more about the show and how politics was really a very big part of what it was?
Yes, politics was a huge part of Soul. I think many times people didn't really have the platform to speak up and to be free to speak up without worrying about repercussions. And so many of the people who were part of the movement were on the show. The Black Panthers were on there. The you know, political artists such as the Last Poets who were going to be performing with us on Wednesday, they were really free to speak their mind. And I think that that was a radical moment, because Black people weren't empowered at that time. So to have a platform to speak freely and politically was really significant.
And the show also attracted so many stars very young and early in their careers. Mm-hmm. How was the show able to attract these era-defining people?
Once again, it was all because of the relationships they had with Ellis. He was actually friends with so many of these artists, and he saw them and saw the future. He was kind of an Afrofuturist in that he saw the betterment of what they could become. And so he would see and Ashford and Simpson, for example, and knew that they were writing songs. You know, they were on hired by Berry Gordy to write for Tammy Terrell that was really important, and Marvin Gaye, of course. But Ellis said, instead of writing for Tammy Terrell and Marvin Gaye, why don't you perform your own songs? And they hadn't even ever performed their own songs because they didn't think of themselves as performers. And so he said, no, I see you out there doing what's right for you. Is there a way that you could perform your own set? So he had them on the Soul Show before they had even dropped an album, before they were married. And it was remarkable. That really launched their careers. And he was all about sort of jettisoning artists and really picking artists before they were known and really seeing their future. It was pretty remarkable.
How much were his connections related to his experience at Howard University?
There were many. You know, Howard University and Washington, D.C. was a hotbed of culture back in the 30s and 40s. And even though it was segregated, that was actually enriching because they had the Howard Theater there. And a lot of the big bands like Duke Ellington and anybody who was segregated by this, you know, constrictions of the time would come through and that would flourish. And so the Howard Players were a theatrical group, and many of them went on to be very famous at Howard University. And I think he even staged some works by James Baldwin at that time at Howard University and was given that platform. So that really helped him with his vision for the future.
Layla, let's talk a little bit about what's planned for Wednesday. You are going to be the headlining act this Wednesday. The event is Lincoln Center's tribute to Soul at the Center. It's happening on Wednesday at 7 p.m. Tell us a bit about the set list that you have prepared.
Ha ha! It's going to be so good. We have Vince Mendoza coming in. We have an orchestra. It's going to be beautiful. My sister is flying in to sing some of these songs. So we're going to try and play everyone's favorite songs, but invariably someone will say, you didn't sing my song. That's what will happen.
Are you going heavy on your dad's...
It's all Donny Hathaway music. It's the entire evening is Donny Hathaway orchestrated beautiful music, and my band is coming, and I'm so excited. Some of these songs I don't think I've ever sung live, so it's going to be really great.
How have you pared down the music selection for what you'd like to play on Wednesday?
It was hard. I mean, I was going through it until about a week ago, and Vince said, you know what, we need a set list so I can put my book in order. You need to make a set list. And I am one that will call the set list half an hour before the show. So I told him, I gave him a set list, and I said, I may call an audible at the show, so don't be alarmed.
And Layla, you are a singer and a songwriter in your own right.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about your music, any upcoming projects you have coming up?
I'm working on some new music. This is my summer of my dad. It's been 40 years since he passed away, and he just received a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Grammys. We recorded a show for that that's going to air in October. So when I get home, I'm going to rest for approximately 7.5 days. And then I'm going to get started working on whatever is next.
Enjoy that very restful
week
I hope you have coming up. I saw in Wednesday's programming that the Illustrious Blacks will be playing too. And I actually interviewed them here on this show a few months ago. What about their work, and Melissa, maybe this is more of a question for you, but Layla, you as well, what about their work relates to Donny Hathaway and what he was doing at his time?
I think it actually sort of bounces off of what Ellis was doing because they have sort of a queer, Afrocentric, Afrofuturistic vibe, very fabulous. I think their hashtag is live the hype life.
Yeah, that's right.
And they are, you know, they're just really fantastic and fabulous. And we wanted that kind of element as well. And they love disco and they're just thinking outside the box. They're really, really amazing. And they're also great DJs. And we have them lined up for the after party as
well.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
Do you have any other ways that Ellis Hayslip's persona and soul really will be captured on Wednesday?
Oh, absolutely. We are going to show a clip from the film. We're going to show the trailer from Mr. Soul. And what we've done is we've kind of looked at the program from 1972 and 1973 and picked some highlights. So, of course, Layla, the daughter of Soul, will be representing her father. And we're also going to have the Last Poets on there because they made their television debut on October 24th, 1968. It was the fifth episode of Soul.
And tell us a little bit more about them for those who aren't familiar.
The Last Poets are really the hip-hop forefathers. They started what is known now as spoken word. But, you know, in the beginning of rap, when you think of the beginning of rap, you have to think of its connection to poetry. And many of the hip-hop stars today, you know, bow down to the Last Poets because of what they represent. Pure, undiluted, unapologetically black rap and poems. And so we thought, well, of course we have to have them. We're also going to have a tribute to dance, and then we're going to have some of the sort of the elder statesmen of dance, George Faison and Carmen de Lavallade, come out.
Oh, how lovely. And George Faison was here on the show a few months ago, too.
Yeah, shout out to George. And of course, we'll start it with a gospel choir, because Ellis always felt that we should bless the spaces we are in and to bless that spiritually. So we're going to have a gospel choir, Roosevelt Credit, and the LaPel Choir are going to rock the house. And we'll constantly feature images, both from Soul at the Center and the television show, and some of the artists that you'll see on stage, we'll see them from 50 years ago. It's also the 60th anniversary of Lincoln Center, so there are a lot of anniversaries here, and the 20th anniversary of OK Player. We got to give a shout out to them.
Absolutely.
Shout out to OK Player. They are also co-presenting with us, and this is really significant because of what they've done. They curated a phenomenal playlist on Spotify just to get everybody in the mood for Wednesday. So, folks,
how can
check
people
that
find
out. It's on Spotify.
Okay. What should they search for?
Soul at the Center, and it's basically a list of, you know, the best soul music you should hear before you die.
That's great. It sounds like you have quite a program lined up for Wednesday.
Yeah.
People can still buy tickets, right?
It's free.
It's free. It's free. $99.
Free $99.
Free $99.
Well, my guests here have been... Sorry, go ahead.
You just have to show up early. There will be a lot of people.
Show up early. Okay, yeah. There's no RSVP required or anything. Just show up early for a good spot.
Yep. There are 2,600 seats, and then you can stand behind that. But you're going to want to get there. Doors are at 6, and the show starts at 7.
My guests have been producer and director Melissa Hayslip and Grammy Award-winning singer and songwriter Layla Hathaway. Layla, as I mentioned, will be headlining this Wednesday at 7 p.m. at Lincoln Center's tribute to Soul at the Center. Our very own Terrence McKnight from WQXR will be hosting that evening. Head to Lincoln Center's website for more details. As we mentioned, it is free. You just have to show up. Melissa, Layla, thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Coming up next, my conversation with the director and producer of the music documentary Echo in the Canyon. Stay with us, there's much more after the break.
NYC Now delivers breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. By sponsoring our programming, you'll reach a community of passionate listeners in an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to learn more.